You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The New Zealand Human Rights Commission has called upon the government to respect the rights of those being held in detention in its response to COVID-19. People detained by the authorities have a heightened risk of infection due to living in close proximity to one another and because of their limited capacity to take precautionary measures. So we spoke to the Chief Legal Advisor at the Human Rights Commission, Janet Anderson-Bidois, about implications of the new restrictions on those already in detention and how their human dignity can be respected and maintained.
There's a worry that restrictions being put on people in detention due to COVID-19 are going to undermine those people's dignity. First off, what is the definition of someone in detention, and approximately how many individuals in New Zealand fall into this category at the moment?
Oh, that's a really good question. So the international definition is that we look at when we're looking at our independent monitoring processes is any form of detention or imprisonment or the placement of a person in a private or public custodial setting which that person is not permitted to leave at will. And so we have existing monitoring frameworks in place. We work quite closely with the Office of the Ombudsman, the Children's Commissioner and the Independent Police Conduct Authority. So we cover all places of detention such as mental health units, which are locked that people can't leave at will. We cover youth justice facilities at Oranga Tamariki Youth Care and Protection Residences. We also cover prisons, police cells and other places where people can be detained. So the numbers are quite large. I think the prison population is 10,000 off the top of my head. And there's many other people at various points in time held in those other facilities. So we already have existing monitoring arrangements in place for those facilities, but we're also concerned about some of the new types of detention that are emerging with the COVID response.
And so what is human dignity and what human rights have to be met to ensure that people maintain their dignity, especially in these situations of detention?
Well, human dignity is one of the fundamental principles that underpin human rights in general. And some of the things that we look at in a practical sense are things like whether people have access to appropriate food, medical treatment, whether they get the information that they require, whether they're subjected to reasonable treatment, so they're not subjected to cruel, inhuman, degrading treatment or to torture or ill treatment. So there's a number of things that we look at in a practical sense to make sure that their dignity and their human rights are being upheld.
And so which human rights are susceptible or more susceptible to being violated in situations like this, like the COVID-19 pandemic, where we're encouraged to stay local and talk to only those within our bubble? Like, how does that relate to those that can't leave these situations of state-mandated detention?
So I think in the current situation, there's a very fine line at the moment between what we normally think of as a detention or a place of detention, such as a facility, and the restrictions that we are all subject to in our daily lives. And if you're looking, even if you look at just our Bill of Rights Act, there's a number of rights there that we all have that we're entitled to. So there are things like liberty, so being entitled to liberty of the person and not to be arbitrarily detained. We're looking at things like freedom of association and freedom of movement. What's really important is that when governments take actions to limit those rights, we have to be really sure, they have to be sure when they do it, that those measures are justifiable, so that they're really needed, that they're proportionate, so that they meet the degree of risk involved, so they're not overreaching in terms of the powers that they've got. They also have to be necessary to achieve the purpose. So there's a number of legal tests that we look at to make sure that if there's a limit on those rights, that those limits are appropriate.
Is it, I guess, the restrictions that have been placed on all of us, but specifically to those in detention, when there are added restrictions onto those people, does it become disproportionate to them?
Well, the really difficult thing is that people who are in detention are already quite vulnerable to human rights abuses. Mm. And that's why, you know, if they can't leave or they can't access people who may be able to assist them, or they can't communicate with their friends and family or their lawyers or their doctors, they're already quite vulnerable. And so that's why we've got these existing monitoring frameworks under what's called the Optional Protocol to the Convention Against Torture. So they're already really stringent monitoring that's in place because that recognises how vulnerable these people are. I think that the difficulty is that in extreme times and unprecedented times like we're at the moment, people who are in prisons or in dementia units or in Waranga Tamariki residences are even more vulnerable to abuse. You know, there's a greater likelihood that something could happen and not be identified and not be able to be acted on. So we need to be particularly vigilant at these times.
How do we be particularly vigilant?
Well, one of the things that is important is maintaining monitoring. And obviously it's quite hard when there's physical restrictions on access to places like prisons or mental health units. Now, for good reasons, you know, people who are in prisons are, or locked facilities are very, very vulnerable. We've seen that if you look at what's happened in Rikers Prison in America, there's been some terrible things happening there with the COVID outbreak. So we have to be mindful that these people, we don't want to be introducing any illness to the facilities. We don't want to be introducing those people to a further risk of illness, bearing in mind that they're already vulnerable anyway. But we do also need to make sure that we protect people who might be undertaking monitoring as well. And so what we do know is that places like the Children's Commissioner's Office are trialling some virtual monitoring using IT and AV equipment, doing things to make sure they can maintain communication with the children in the facilities.
But yeah, that was one of my questions specifically about children in the care of Oranga Tamariki. Obviously, they have increased risk not only being in detention but also being children. In situations where there's fear for the safety of a child, what protocol is there now for checking on them when we can't break social bubbles? I imagine it's even more difficult now.
My understanding is that, you know, clearly if there's an overriding risk or a concern for the safety of an individual, now whether that be a person who's in a violent domestic situation or concerns for the safety of a child, that there would be provisions that allowed people to seek access for that assistance. So I would really not want to see people thinking that they couldn't contact agencies or seek assistance from the police or others if they thought somebody was at risk.
Do you know if the government currently has any plan in place to address these issues and protect those in their detention?
I think that the different agencies are dealing with it in different ways. And so I know that the Human Rights Commission has been having some discussions with the Ministry of Health, trying to establish the basis upon which people are being held. We're trying to find out a little bit more about the things like the camper vans and the car parks that we've been hearing about in the media. Who's being held there? What basis are they being held? What arrangements are being put in place to make sure that they are getting food and access to healthcare, that they can communicate with people? Oh, I think the different independent monitoring agencies that we work with are also having those discussions with the government agencies that they deal with, such as corrections in Waranga Tamariki.
Is there any way that you would recommend going forward in this pandemic to ensure that the rights of and dignity of people in detention are not violated?
Well, I think the key things, not just for the people in detention, but for the people in the wider community, that the government just remembers those rules. You know, is it a justifiable measure that they're imposing? Is it necessary in order to achieve the purpose that they're trying to achieve? Is it proportionate? Are they only keeping the measures in place as long as they need to? We're sure that the government's trying to do their best in a terribly, truly terrible situation at the moment, but we do have to remember that, you know, there are some limits to what can be done, and need to keep a close eye on those and keep reviewing the situations frequently, rather than just putting limits in place and then leaving them in place if they no longer need to be.
Do you think that the current restrictions fall into that category of being necessary and proportionate?
Look, it's really difficult to tell. I don't have access to the information that the government has at the time that they're making these decisions, but I think it's a question that people will be asking as time goes on. It may even be something that may be considered through the courts at a later date. So it's really important, though, that we just keep an eye on it, that we all play our bit, do what we're expected to do in terms of limiting the COVID spread, but also that we continue to question the rules that are being put in place, through the appropriate channels, and just make sure that people are mindful of the legal obligations that are there as well.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.